Welcome all you fellow Arcanists out there to the Frith Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you have not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab your copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back. On their way to Thronehold, Adelgis Venrover, Zelfri, Volk, and Zaxis stop at the Venrover Mansion to see Theosin Venrover, Adelgis' father, where it is revealed the young man's sickness is caused by an abyssal leech, intentionally implanted under his skin by his own father. Adelgis' mother is unconcerned and is instead mad at Zelfri and his thugs for attempting to interfere. Then, just as they prepare to leave, she announces that Adelgis is leaving the Frith Guild and staying with her. But before we get into the book, let's take a look at a piece of advice from the series. Step 53 on the Pillar of Bruma says benevolence. Without it, we cannot become a true leader. With that, let's join Eric and Scott for chapters 11 through 15 of Colosseum Arcanist.
Hello and welcome back to the Frith Guild podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
I'm co-host Scott.
And today we're going over Colosseum Arcanist, chapters 11 through 15. Before we get into that, we're going to discuss a couple of important things. First, we always ask you to like, share, subscribe, leave a review, all of that good stuff. So that way we know that we're doing a good job with you guys. Secondly, we have a couple important things to make sure we announce. And the first one is that Deathlord Arcanist is actually going to be released on March 27th, the same day this episode releases. So if you're listening to the podcast right now or watching us on YouTube, make sure after you get done, you head over to Amazon or anywhere else that you're going to be reading this book at and make sure you get Deathlord Arcanist and start reading on that. And then secondly, Time Marked Warlock is actually should have been out a little bit earlier, but due to some unforeseen things, it will be released in April. We're just waiting for a solid date from Shammy to be able to let everybody know that. And without further ado, we're going to get into Chapter 11.
Awesome. So Chapter 11 is the Aura of Prosperity. And we open up with a conversation between Adelgis and his mom. And she pretty much flat out tells him that she does not read any of the letters that he has sent back home to her because she is too busy with other things.
And again, looking back into Adelgis's family, I understand he's not the oldest. He's not the first son, but to be like, hey, I haven't read any of your letters that you've sent me. Like that's pretty low blow to Adelgis. Like I really feel for the guy.
Yeah. That's a tough hit. Zelfri wants to go talk to Theosin, which is Adelgis's dad. And Theosin is a Relic Keeper Arcanist, which makes sense. The Relic Keeper is associated with finding and preserving magical items, being able to tell what their powers are. So it fits very well with, you know, the scholarly nature. We also get a chance to meet or hear about Adelgis's sister and find out that his sister is actually hobbled or handicapped in some way.
Get a glimpse of seeing Adelgis with his family and showing that she's really the only one that he, I don't say he cares for, but he's the one that he shows emotion to, the one that actually seems like she is showing emotion back to him and reciprocating that.
There actually feels like there's some love there.
Exactly. So in addition to them leaving, Zelfri is actually wants Volk to, you know, make sure he keeps an eye out on Adelgis. And Volk's pretty much like, look, I already planned that anyways, so I appreciate you saying it, but I got this.
He's seen the leech. He's good to keep an eye there.
Yep.
The guild starts to head out and leave the town, and Zaxis goes on another rant about how he's going to win the tourney, and there's, you know, no doubt there, and really no short of confidence at any point with Zaxis, so this fits pretty well.
This is just Zaxis in general, so you gotta love it, like, gotta love to hate how confident he is sometimes, but it is Zaxis, so we gotta keep that in mind, so. And I think the biggest thing outside of him just being him is he wants to show off to Ilya and show that he is the better Arcanist, the best Arcanist the best apprentice Arcanus. So,
and we also get a insight into this other form of magic that hasn't been talked about. It's called an aura, and specifically it's brought up because Sovereign Dragon Arcanists have a prosperity aura, which is one of the reasons why they are always chosen to rule over nations.
In the book, they give us a definition of what an aura is. Aura is an area of effect where their magic permeates everything.
And there isn't very much discussion around auras here. Volk is curious what the nightmare aura would be, and you were kind of curious about some other mythical creatures and what theirs would be as well. So something we're looking forward to later in the book as that gets explored.
Can we just say how excited and giddy Gilly was to listen to Zelfrey explain something to Volk as an apprentice? Like, she was super over the moon. Like, ooh, I want to see it. Tell me again let me see how you teach.
Yes, she always brings her amazing with her, and she was, like you said, over the moon for it, which was funny. At the end of the chapter, Volk goes on a walk into the woods with Luthair, and they end up hearing a girl screaming for help. And that brings us into chapter 12, which is the river encounter. And Volk goes and saves the girl from drowning. He goes into the river. He's very good in the water. Gravemaster William grew up on an island. He's born and raised there. Ends up saving her and makes a comment about how her mother would be upset. And she gets very, very feisty with him and starts to make up a story about how he was obviously spying on her and she didn't need help. And then people start to arrive on the scene. She continues to put up this frantic nature, more intent on punishing Volk for his actions than taking responsibility for what really happened.
Like, this whole scene escalates so fast. Like, one minute Volk is just doing his thing, rescuing her, and the next minute she's like, oh my gosh, he manhandled me. Like, he's the worst person in the world. Like, I feel like Ron Burgundy. Like, that escalated quickly.
That really got out of hand fast. Luckily, the girl's sister, Livia, comes over and essentially apologizes for her behavior. She knows that the young girl was really trying to get a glitter crab, which is a creature that's supposed to bring extra luck. So Volk, being the kind-hearted person that he is, even after this whole affair, goes and uses his shadow tendrils to actually capture and give the girl the glitter crab. And there's also this moment where they joke about some of the famous Arcanists of old and almost like they're retelling stories of their own, but a very cute little moment between them.
Could this be love? Like, I know Volk's kind of pining for Addy, but, you know, maybe it could be love. Like, him and
it feels
Livia
like it
are
fits
talking
a little
about,
bit.
I think, Lark the Gallant. And right. Like, it looks like it could be a blossoming thing here. And, you know, go Volk. Just stumbling in the woods and happens to save the girl in the river and meeting her older sister. And they actually know all these old stories, and Volk's actually like really relaxed and not awkward. And like, I don't know, not like a 17, 18 year old that just stumbled across somebody that could be potentially love.
Yeah. So very, very excited for him for this situation. And I also just find it funny how often he comes to find himself in these little flirtatious romantic encounters, even though he's not at all looking for that.
So was that like, you know what, fine, just kick him out the door and like, figure it out. Well, come on.
Yes. So that brings us to chapter 13, Throne Hold, and Volk is heading back to the rest of the guild. He's getting good with his magic. He feels confident with himself. He's comparing himself to Zaxxas. I don't know if that's positive or negative when you look at it, but he is. And Luthair cautions him a little bit against having too much confidence.
Well, and Luthair even says, confidence is like liquor. Too much, and you'll make yourself into a fool.
And that is, I don't think that's a pillar, but it's some wise advice. So,
right. That's pretty solid Lutherisms.
So Volk is still riding on his high and decides that he's going to compete in the tournament. Personally, I thought he had already decided he was going to compete in the tournament, but he is truly and fully committed himself to it and ends up walking hours back to the caravan. Again, I thought he was a little bit closer and surprised he wandered off so far, but he was very, very far away from the rest of the group. And when he gets back, Addy asks him why he's wet, and Zaxus jokes that he must have fallen in the river because his boots are wet, and he would have taken his boots off if he was going swimming. The group has another little discussion about the tournament. Hexa and Ilya also chime in that they're going to be entering the tournament, and the group pulls up, essentially crests the hill, and is able to see Thronehold in all of its majesty. There's an airship hovering above the city. There's smoke. And as the group is approaching, they're starting to go through what end up being fields of Nullstone. And they find out that it's much harder for them to breathe. They don't have any access to any of their magic or their passive abilities. So a very odd sensation, I'm sure, not having access to magic.
Having tapped into the ability to use magic, and all of a sudden that's just like kind of taken away. All of a sudden you can't use something that you're so used to having available. This is another one of those scenes where you're just like, well, Volk, you just had your talk with Livia and then you help Addy get down off the carriage, like picturing the whole grabbing her by the waist and sending her nice and gently on the ground. And, you know, she even like strokes his arm as they're getting down. So it's like, well, crap, you're definitely confident now. Like, you wanted to talk to her about, you know, way things are going with you guys, maybe, possibly.
So it's cute.
It's cute to see Volk in a very nice and happy place.
He's in a happy place, and he's got a little smooth mojo going to him. He's feeling good. As they approach the gates, they realize that one of the guards is Lionel, who's Zaxus's little brother, and who Volk saved from the plague-ridden White Stag at the very, very beginning of the first book. So they have a moment, and Lionel confesses to Volk that what he did inspired Lionel to go out and choose to adventure. And although he's technically not old enough to bond with an Eldrin, he did actually lie about his age and is a will-o'-wisp arcanist. And he is very power drunk on this and very happy that he has an Eldrin, even though it is considered a very weak Eldrin.
Hey, an arcanist is an arcanist, okay? Doesn't matter how strong they are, their arcanist is an arcanist.
Yes, you initially go to a status level above everyone else, so.
And that leads us into chapter 14. And this is where we actually get into Thronehold, and there's just so much going on in here. So all the plague-ridden creatures are supposed to be escorted by the Lamplighters Guild. And remember, we still have a carriage full of plague-ridden creatures. We have a better understanding that the Nullstone is being used to confine those plague-ridden creatures, so we're not as concerned about them. But we still want to see these plague-ridden creatures put to somewhere that's not going to cause problems. So Luther is feeling kind of, I guess, at home, because this is where he used to be. He used to be in Thronehold, and he's kind of having a little trip down memory lane, being back in Thronehold and getting that, you know, sense of purpose again of where he is. And there are some particular places that Luther really wants to visit, and I feel like we're about to get a huge list before Zaxus comes and interrupts. These trolleys are fairly large. They have bench seats in them. They're basically the size of a gazebo is what they're explained. And Volk kind of look at it like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then Zaxus comes up and he's like, is that really Lyle? How do you run this thing? And Lyle kind of explains about how the horseless trolleys work, and his will-o-wisp is what controls the steam engine in it. And Zax is like, well, what if I use my Phoenix fire? And he's like, stop.
He's so power hungry, and he's on his high telling Zaxxas that he can't use his Phoenix Fire because it's too powerful. So it has to be a Will-O-Wisp Arcanist that steers these.
I love Lyle's Eldrin's name is Tintin.
It is amazing.
Like, I feel like it fits perfectly with the steam engine and everything. So, yeah, gotta give him credit where you can get it. So, in the city of Thronehold, we do get some descriptions of it. Is the streets have cobblestones, and they're fairly smooth. There's steam that billows up from underground, and we actually find out that Thronehold was built on top of Nullstone quarries. We find out that these quarries basically are tunnels to either catacombs or to sewers. So this place is really intricate. And Volk thought that he was stepping into the future, getting to Fortuna in comparison to Ruma. Now he's at Thronehold and he's just like, oh my gosh, I didn't think things could get bigger. So Zaxxas finally confronts Lyle about the fact that Lyle is an Arcanist. And I'm sure, again, the thoughts of, hey, you don't technically turn of age until you're 15, 16. And I'm sure Zaxxas did the math and was like, you're definitely not of age yet. But I don't think even Zaxxas would kind of rain on his prey like that. So we also get a pretty good idea of how the whole city is laid out. And like Elios was laid out in squares, everything was gridded. It was a very thought out, planned out city. Whereas Thronehold's kind of just thrown out, and we needed to connect this house to that house and that business to this business, and that's kind of how it went. But they do have signs and pictures on those signs telling you which district you're in. So if you do get lost, you can kind of know where you're at least. The lamplighters are mainly actually used to help people navigate around the city, and they're also supposed to be helping with the trolleys. They finally do get to the prison, as the trolleys have been hauling the carriages with, and we find out in the prison that they actually have refined Nullstone. So it doesn't work unless you're inside of the building. So the suffocating feeling that everybody was getting while they were walking through the Nullstone fields coming into Thronehold, everybody's expecting that same feeling, and they don't actually feel it anymore because it only affect them if they go inside of it.
It's much more targeted, which makes sense. You wouldn't want to rob the whole city of magic.
Right. I wonder if they have regular jails. Because I feel like these Nullstone jails would be like, yeah, we're just going to strip you of your power. So, like, Arcanists can't figure out how to be a human again without their magic. So I feel like the Nullstone prisons are probably a lot less guarded or difficult than I think a normal prison would be.
It is very curious. And, you know, you wouldn't want to waste a spot in one of the Nullstone prisons on a petty thief when you may need it for some Arcanist who has magic that could be potentially dangerous.
Exactly. So this is for the first time where we actually get a good idea of how the arcane plague affects things. We do find out that the Arcanists themselves never actually go like laughing mad as the mystical creatures themselves do. But we do get a timeline of how long it takes for the plague to fully affect Arcanists. And it takes effect to like 6 months up to a year. If there was a cure for the plague, there is some time to get to them. But immediately after they drop off these plague-ridden creatures, Zelfry grabs Vulcanilia and takes him straight to the university library that's in Thronehold. And they're just trying to get more information about the World Serpent. We find out that there are 13 creatures that will spawn again when there's another fundamental shift in magic. And these 13 creatures spawn in a very specific order. This event would basically be called the turning of an age. So we find out that star shards were originally made when the last turning of age occurred. Each of these creatures has a specific landmark that would show where it is. And the Arcane Plague is essentially that fundamental shift in magic to cause the cycle to begin again.
And we also find out that they're called the god creatures. They commonly refer to the Arcanists as gods, but the Arcanists are essentially just normal people, normal Arcanists who happen to bond with god creatures. So it isn't as limited who would be able to bond with them. And if this sort of threw me off the numbers the first time, so there are 13 god creatures, but there are only 12 runestones. The last god creature is mentioned to be the Apoc dragon, who doesn't actually bond, but is the final creature there to essentially kill everyone off and bring things back to brevity.
To wipe the earth of the other god creatures, I guess.
Make things fair again, I guess. So it's very interesting. And just something to note of why 13 creatures, 12 runestones, one of the creatures does not bond.
And this takes us into our last chapter, chapter 15, Queen Valetta. Now, someone had to have created this plague, and they had to have done it very methodically to release it, cause this to be as efficient as possible. They first thought about Callisto, thinking that maybe he had something to do with it. And I think everybody agreed at one point that Callisto is just, he's just a dog. He's just a dog chasing a car. He just does it because he does it. He has no real rhyme or reason. He's there to do his thing and just be content. He wants to do his thing. The next part of this whole part is, not only do we need to know what god creature is going to be summoned and awakened first, and then the order, but we also need to figure out where they are, because again, it's going to be a pretty significant thing to find. Finally, there are things that we need to have in order to get into the chamber to be able to do their trial of worth for the god creatures. These are runestones, again, 12 runestones that are used to open the lair of each individual god creature and allow them to do their trial of worth. Very fortunately, we find out that Queen Valetta, who just happens to be the Queen of Thronehold, actually has all 12 of these runestones. Like, yes, we're in the right place. Maybe we could just convince her to just give over the runestones, because, you know, she might not know what exactly they are. Let's try to pull the wool over her eyes so we can save the world, but not tell her that, because I feel like if she knows that everything's happening like it is, she's probably going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to control the runestones so that I get to pick who bonds with what for my territory.
And we've already heard some comments from Zelfry on how he doesn't approve of Queen Valetta, so definitely doesn't approve of her becoming a god amongst men.
Volk actually, curiously enough, asked for a book that was written by Thiessen Venrover, and I don't think Volk really intended on any particular book in general. I think he just probably wanted to get a little bit behind the scenes of Adelgis' father more than just what he's heard. And this is probably why he asked for a book.
And the book he ends up getting is a guide on different mythical creatures, which is very informative and super helpful just in determining what creatures are out there. What does magic look like? How does it affect creatures differently? So a lot of good information in the book.
And Volk really looks out on this one. The librarian also is like, hey, we have several of these copies. It's not something that is completely and totally one of a kind that we can't lend out. We'll let you have it for as long as you want it, but please return it back in its like original condition, you know? Like a respect the book. So first off, don't ever let Zaxxas touch it.
Fire bad.
Yes. When he just leaves them laying on the ground covered in dew. So like, let's leave it away from Zaxxas. They do start to leave, and we find out that Leah and Zelfry are kind of thinking that Queen Valetta may be behind this, the whole plague getting started. You know, it'd be very beneficial to her because, again, she probably knows what these runestones are for. And again, she has them all. So she could, you know, just like Pokemon, she could collect them all, you know, She can have all 12 of the god creatures for her empire. If someone is after these runestones, that the Frith Guild needs to make sure that they don't get stolen.
And being that they are held by the queen, it would be a master plan to actually go through and pull off a heist of that level. That is Ocean's level thievery right there.
This is where Liette's plans back in the beginning of this book was talking about building up the Frith Guild and really recruiting hard. What other place best than at a tournament, or a place where it's holding a tournament for Arcanus and possibly to be able to recruit people? So they definitely are in a good spot for recruitment and hopefully be able to bulk up their numbers, as Liette anticipates having to go through a war and is going to need all the help we can get for the Frith Guild. Volk gets a quick glance through Thessian's book, and the first thing he learns through that book is there are different tiers of mystical creatures. And he does give us a kind of a breakdown on each tier. Tier one is basically a puddle, where it would be like a puddle. And he describes these as creatures that are very weak. And they basically are creatures that will reach their final maturity within just a few years. And lo and behold, the first example listed is a Will-O-Wisp.
10-10.
So again, you kind of feel for, good for Lyle for becoming an Arcanist. You got to give him that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a Will-O-Wisp. Like, one of the lowest tiers, one of the weakest creatures, other than just sprites and gnomes. And obviously, these aren't all of the examples, but these are the examples that are listed in Thessian's book. Tier 2 is described as being like a pond, and the creatures will reach their maturity within a few decades. So again, still fairly quick to reach their maturity, but not nearly as fast as the tier ones like the Will-O-Wisps. And some creatures that are listed as examples for tier two are unicorns, trolls, and ghouls.
And the thing to remember as you go through it is that it is a few decades, but Arcanists are supposed to live for centuries. So it is not nearly as large a portion as of their lives as it would be for normal humans.
Right. Like, I imagine that's almost like a blink in their lives for a decade. I guess as long as nothing too crazy is happening.
Depends on the decade. 70s lasted a little longer.
Yeah. Moving into tier three, we have what's described as a lake. And these are creatures that will reach final maturity around a century. And these are phoenixes, manticores, and leviathans. And Volk draws the conclusion that more than likely nightmares fall into that category. And Luther is in agreement as well. I don't know about you, but even if I was a Will-O-Wisp, I'd be like, nah, man, that ain't right. I'm a tier four. Yeah, I'm on the same level as a dragon, okay?
The Zax is equivalent of Will-O-Wisps.
Yeah. So tier fours are described as basically the sea, and these mystical creatures will reach their final maturity after multiple centuries, but still might not ever fully mature. And this tier is specifically reserved for dragons only. And finally, tier fives, those are considered like an endless ocean. And these are, this tier is magic that is so vast that those that bond with them become gods. And these are the god creatures that, the 12 god creatures that we're trying to find and collect. I feel like there's gonna be a lot of Pokemon references coming up.
There is. It is entering its prime. We got a Pokedex now, too.
What's that?
We got a Pokedex now, too.
Yes. Yes. And it was given by a professor.
It was. It's...
So Volk is training with Zaxxas and Forsythe, and as Volk is very determined to do very well and to win this tournament. Forsyth actually suggests that Volk imagines his terriers like a cloud and to direct that cloud to affect whom he wants. So again, Volk has that, given that little nugget of information to help him to be able to pass on his night vision. And Forsyth just gives Volk another little nugget of information to kind of shake things up and look at things in a different way and to visualize it like a cloud. So we'll have to see how that plays out for Volk later on. And we end this chapter with going to the actual castle for a meeting with Queen Valetta.
And then moving on to the bestiary, there are a lot more new creatures popping up, and we can only imagine as we get into the tournament that that's going to continue to be the case. So highlighting a few of the ones that there's more information on, the Relic Keeper, which is described as a large dragon made of forgotten trash with the ability to preserve living and non-living things with its magic. It is a trash dragon. And its reproduction is through fable. So this is one of the ones we haven't seen as often, but essentially when a hoard of treasure or trash, I guess, has been sequestered from the world for 100 years, at that point, a Relic Keeper will spawn. And their trial of worth specifically involves sifting through garbage to find treasure, which often results in Arcanists destroying their hands, getting cut up, all sorts of injuries. Their magical abilities, their evocation is a dust that cuts like glass, so it's trash dust. Manipulation and augmentation, they're able to preserve living creatures at the point of death, keeping them alive but in stasis. So this is something that we saw with the preservation of the Abyssal Leash, able to use magic to keep it alive for a long period of time when it shouldn't have been alive otherwise. And then from a passive ability point, they are able to tell the abilities and the strengths of different magical items just based on holding them and interacting with them. And I will say that I absolutely love the Relic Keeper Dragon. It is such a fun premise.
So there's the Trash Panda, which is a raccoon. And then there's the Relic Keeper, which is...
a trash dragon.
A trash dragon, yeah.
It's tier 4, though, so...
What's that?
It's tier 4, though, so...
Right. I mean, again, you can't really like argue with it.
No, it is very powerful. So, and very unique and very powerful abilities as well.
And even how it's Fableborn, you know, pile of trash sequestered for over 100 years. Imagine it's at like year 99 and 363 days and somebody randomly happens upon it. And it's just like, son of a pee. I was almost there.
So close.
Now I got to start all over again. So moving on to the Ghostlight, which was the professor that we met in the university library. So the Ghostlight is, it's also called Spook Lights. They are green and blue or glowing jellyfish-like creatures attracted to knowledge and intelligence. Their reproduction is also fable. They are spawned in abandoned buildings that used to be of great importance. One big thing to note with ghost lights are these are one of the mystical creatures that actually prefers to bond with older, more mature humans rather than with somebody very young. They prefer intelligence. We actually don't know what their trial of worth is, but we do know their evocation is telekinesis, or be able to move things telepathically. And they are also able to manipulate smoky illusions. And this is how the professor in the library was explaining the 13 god creatures.
Very, very interesting. And then also unique preferences of the ghost lights. So, and then the last one that we'll talk about is the Will-O-Wisps, which are, as mentioned, they're small beings of fire, and they're known for either helping or tricking lost travelers. And it really depends on the color that they come in. So red wisps are known as tricksters, and they're known to lead people astray. Purple Wisps guide children back to their parents. Blue Wisps help those lost in bad weather. And then White Wisps are supposed to guide people to a great destiny. There are also Green Wisps, which are very rare, and their attributes aren't known, but they are suspected to be much greater. We don't know much about the reproduction, but evocation, they're able to use fire, though, as we saw with Zaxxas and Lyle, much, much weaker than a phoenix, and not too much detail around passive abilities that they gain.
All right, and that ends this week's episode. Again, we want to remind everybody that today that this podcast, this episode is coming out. Deathlord Arcanus is being released. Again, go over to Amazon and get that looked into. I know I'll be trying to consume it as fast as I can. And again, we're waiting to find out the exact date release for Time Marked Warlock, which is her new urban fantasy book. So we know it should be sometime in April, so we just want to reiterate that. We do want to thank you for listening today and thank our editor, Dan Mackison. You can find this podcast on Podbean, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts, pretty much anywhere a podcast is playing. We are on YouTube. We are on Facebook as well. And we do want to give a special thank you to the Frith Chronicles fandom as we get into all of the bestiaries and all of these different mystical creatures through these sections. So they are going to be a huge help. I know once the bestiary book comes out, which hopefully is, again, sometime here in the near future. And I believe they're still taking orders for the bestiary as well. We should be getting more information about these mystical creatures. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at frithfieldpod@gmail.com. Or you can shoot us a message on Facebook or comment on our Facebook page. Scott, was there anything else you'd like to add?
Check back next week for a new next step in the Pokemon journey.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you. And I'll see you guys next week.